Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.
They need to hear the truth. They need to see what's best for them, not just the next day, to have a plan for the next years.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches podcast, we're joined by Zcis Sarakopoulos, founder of Adapted Services and a former high-level college and professional player. Zcis played at UAB and Ohio State before continuing his career professionally in Greece, Belarus, and Qatar, gaining experience with different systems and coaching styles around the world. Now, through Adapted Services, he works closely with players as they navigate important decisions in their careers. In this episode, we discuss what coaches should understand when recruiting international players, the common traits he's seen from the best coaches he has played for, and the biggest mistakes players are making today that could impact them long term.
Ladies and gentlemen, and coaches for everybody, thank you all for tuning in to another episode, the Rising Coaches Podcast. Your hosts, Alan Major and Doug Caputo. We're lucky today. We got a great person to be able to chop it up with. We're joined alongside the founder of Adapted Services, had a heck of a playing career, college, professionally. We'll dive into that more. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Zcis Sarakopoulos. Big Z, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm feeling great being on your show. And for me, it's an honor to be on your show, guys. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, brother. We've been looking forward to this. Obviously, great to see you again, as always. So, yeah, we're excited.
Me too.
Obviously, Mage has a great history with you, your experience being at Ohio State. I know you two have a lot more, but from my experience being able to chop it up with you, we got to meet in Indy for everybody this past Final Four in Indianapolis and hopped on a couple phone calls with you as of recently. And I got to say, I know you're passionate about this stuff. It's definitely obvious. And I know you have obviously a great playing career, as we said, but then of course the people you're working with, great players too. So there's definitely a lot of insight that you're going to be able to bring to people, to coaches, about the international style of game, from being a player, from being somebody who works with the current players, and just the development side from there. And as I said, you've experienced the game at a high level, played at Division I, UAB, went on to Ohio State, played professionally in Greece for, what, about 12, 13 years?
14.
14? I undermined one. Sorry.
That's okay.
And also across multiple countries, too, which is amazing. Obviously, the longevity of it being home over in Greece. But now, as we said, you're helping guide that next generation through a completely different side and basketball landscape. Just looking at your journey, what you have gone through, what you have accomplished, and now looking at the landscape nowadays, how do you feel the landscape has changed, has altered, and what lessons that you feel that you learned translate into maybe what's going on now?
All right. So the landscape has completely shifted since I played. The landscape is shifting every day, as a matter of fact. I am being a little bit romantic in terms of college basketball and what it meant, especially coming as an international to the States to play. It was, for me, it was the perfect combination of playing at a high level with combining education. How I decided to play college basketball, I had three knee surgeries all in my right knee. My first surgery, pretty serious one, was at the age of 14. So at the age of 14, and I was already a prospect at the time, because you can imagine I was 14 years old and I was like 6'8", 6'9". I didn't take it for granted that I would play basketball, because in a bad moment, maybe your career is over. So I wanted to have a plan B, and I said, what's best? It's to use basketball and your talent as a vehicle to go to the States and combine it with academics, no matter where you play. Even if you play in the NBA, you must have a plan B. And I'm really appreciative of that and my journey, because I played 14 seasons with three knee surgeries, and I'm very grateful about that. So when I decided to come to the States, the landscape was completely different. There was no portal, there was no NIL. When we're getting per diem money, we had to sign 2-3 different papers that we received $20, stuff like that. I don't like how everything has become so much transactional I don't like how I understand now that it's money involved and it's good for the product in terms of the end result. You watch some teams that are pretty much like pro teams. The teams that we watched in Indianapolis, they are teams that they can play professionally in any league. They can compete in many European leagues and they are high end. But at the same time, there are some things that I don't like. I don't like that the development part has gone extinct. I don't like that everybody's just looking for ready players or for 1 year deals. And especially coming as an international to the States, going to a program used to mean something. Going to a coach used to mean something, that you would play for that program, you would play for that coach. You felt that pride instead of just changing four or five schools in a 5 year span. This is something I don't like, just changing every year, because it used to mean something. Like when I played at Ohio State, and one of the reasons you would go there was because of the coach. One of the reasons was the tradition. The reason I picked Ohio State was because 3 years in a row they had bigs in the roster that they were drafted in the NBA. So you could see that, okay, obviously these guys are doing something the right way. So I need to go there to get the same time of development. And if I'm good enough, we will see what I'm going to do. And this is obviously credit goes to this guy right here, because he was a big man coach. But at the same time, it used to mean something. That school had that tradition. And today, this is something that I don't really like, because I don't really like how there's so many coaching changes at the same time. Working with some of my players, I was communicating with coaches before the Final Four. So I go to Indianapolis, I come back to Greece from Indianapolis, I speak to these coaches about the same players that they were interested. Now they're different schools. More and more coaching changes now, less and less NBA players declaring for the NBA draft, because all the players are trying to exhaust their eligibility. G League players coming back to play in the NCAA, and I understand it's a pro league now, but it used to have a different type of feeling when you were playing, because there were these players that you were going up against that they were like connected to one school, they were connected to one program. I can recall many players that they were big time in their programs and their name was represented to that program. There were players that they were creating milestones or they were breaking records in their schools. And now you don't see that, because that player will not stay long enough to break that record with their school. We will not see any players breaking records in the school, because now if they have one good year, they're out. So right. It's unless they go from the beginning at the Power Five and they stay there for the whole 4 or 5 years, you won't see any of that. You don't see any of that, like, all-time college tradition, and I get that. But at the same time, about to answer your question, what changed is these things, and there should be some context. There should be some lines about eligibility, about age group, about everything. And I think that there will be eventually, but now it's a little bit like the Wild West.
Yeah.
So you're telling me Mage didn't show up to your doorstep with a fat check in NIL money, just being like, Big Z, come on over here from UAB. That's not how
it wasn't like that at all. And especially at Ohio State, at that time, we were careful and the whole department was doing everything so much by the book that it was annoying. Like, I remember 1 year we're playing the Big Ten ACC Challenge. So we play home against Florida State. We beat them and the gift was a PSP, like a PlayStation Portable. We had to sign, I don't know how many different papers that we are, that we can accept that and we can take that and stuff like that. So it might sound crazy, but that's how things were. And that's how it was for everybody. That's how it was for Evan. Like for ET, for Evan Turner, that was number two draft pick and the player of the year. It was for everybody. It was everything by the book. So it was a completely different story.
Yeah. No, for sure, man. Now that you've kind of transitioned into coaching, obviously you're doing some player development stuff yourself now that you're done, but also on the recruiting end of things, trying to help kids understand the importance of, you want kids to experience what you went through, right? Coming to the States, and you got to experience it at a couple of different levels. You had a tremendous pro career. What's the, in a nutshell, sum up the main hurdle? Because I say that I'm asking this question, coaches may be listening that want to recruit European kids and continue to recruit European kids. But what's the number one thing that you have to get kids there to understand when they want to make that leap coming to the States?
Now, for Europeans, I'm not going to say that it's more difficult, but it's more challenging because the pool of players has opened up so much. Back in my day, when I decided to play college basketball, for Europeans and for Greeks, as a matter of fact, it was a little bit more exotic. Like, you wouldn't see many Greeks. Now, top talent here in Greece wants to go and play college basketball. So it has completely changed. So what I would say that applies to this younger generation is that you have to trust the process, especially as a European. So coming to the States as a European or as an international, you shouldn't just come for a one-year deal. You need to trust the process in terms of building your work ethic, in terms of adjusting to the new landscape, to the new level of athleticism, physicality. And don't be thinking about 1-2 years. You need to think about your whole 4 or 5 years over there in terms of everything, in terms of the situation overall, in terms of the program, in terms of the coaching, in terms of your development. And of course, that players now think about the NIL and everything. You have to think about that, but you need to think about that in the, not for a 1 year, in the long term. You need to think about how successful you can be in a 5-year span. You can't just be thinking about 1-year deals, because 1-year deals, it's not an easy thing. So what I'm saying to the kids, and what I'm saying that applies to pro players, but also applies now to college, because college is pretty much like pro players. From being in a very good situation as a pro player to going back to zero, it's 2 bad moves in a row. It's very simple. It's just going to a team that doesn't work out, or you don't play well, or it's not a good fit for you, coming from a good season, and then you make another bad move. So now, again, you go to point zero. So the same way you need to think about the States. You shouldn't just be thinking about, yeah, I'm just going to have one good year, and then I'm going to blow up, and then I'll get paid and this and that. You will end up getting paid, for sure. You will end up getting what you want, but you need to think about putting simple goals, small goals that you can achieve. And the problem with the generation today, that you can't stress that enough, is that you can't just see the end product. Everybody wants to see the end product. Everybody wants to go from point A that they are today to point B without understanding what's in between, without understanding the work you have to do. And because we live in the era of easy information, and you can access to everything, you can see things. This, unfortunately, in the minds of the kids, they want to see results fast. And sometimes that has to do with their career. They want to see results fast. But being a basketball player, regardless of the level you will play, I'm grateful because I played at a high level. But it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. And you have to think about that. It's a marathon. You can't just be thinking about, yeah, I've had one good season, just how much money I will make the next year. Because if you go to a bad situation, then the year after that, you will have to be renegotiating. You need to make a good establishment. You need to establish yourself first, so coaches can understand you, can appreciate you. And then if you are on top of things, then for sure you will be successful, you will be wanted, and you need to be thinking, and you need to have the big picture. Even today, that there's so much more things involved, there should be better advising overall. That's my opinion. There should be better advising. There shouldn't be people that just want to take advantage of kids, because those are kids that we are talking about. Sure. Yeah, you want them to be successful. You really do. But at the same time, don't take advantage of them. Give them the right advice. So that's my approach and my mentality. I want to give them the right advice. Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's the problem, though, is I feel like a lot of people want to give advice, but nobody really knows what they're talking about. They might think they do. They might say they have the experiences. It's like that person who, I could have been a professional, but I ended up hurting my leg when I was in high school and I never had the career. Well, it's like,
yeah,
you're just making up stories.
I did hurt my leg, but
not you. I know you did.
No.
I'm not saying you. You're a 7-footer who had a.
I know. No,
you have simply, unfortunately, through kids' experiences. And you hate to say it, but sometimes you get the feeling now agents are now the new AAU coaches in some ways.
Yeah.
Because they become that middle person, whereas maybe the AAU coach in the past was like that middle person. But now an agent obviously is a more powerful middle person because there's money involved. But that's a great approach, what you're saying there, because you're trying to obviously have some integrity in the process and go about things the right way. I know that's frustrating for you because you see a lot of things going on around you. But as we've had in our discussions, keep building what you're doing with integrity and being honest and going about it the right way. And that's your version of the long game in itself. That's going to pay off.
No, at the end of the day, my whole approach and mentality and my philosophy and my company's philosophy is the advice I give to kids and the way I treat them is how I would want somebody to be on my side when I was their age, because I didn't have that. So that's how I want to communicate things. I'm saying to the kids things that maybe they don't want to hear, but they need to hear. And it doesn't work for me any other way other than being transparent and honest with both coaches and players. Because when I'm mediating for these kids, I have to be very transparent to the coaches. I don't want to waste the time, but at the same time, I have to keep it real with the players. Because at the end of the day, if it doesn't work out, the player is to pay. The player will not have a good experience, and I want them to have a good experience. But at the same time, nobody prepared me for what I'm going to face. So my freshman year at UAB, we had a very good team. We were in Conference USA. Great coaches, great coaching staff. They helped me a lot. Dusty May was one of our assistants. Bob Dunwald, like great coaches. Yeah. And Mike Davis was our head coach. Like great. I was very lucky in my collegiate career. I worked with great coaches. So nobody prepared me for what we were going to face. And that year we had Memphis in our conference. Nobody prepared me that I will have to hedge out and try to stop Derrick Rose, for example. You know.
Right.
So that was a big reality check for me. So I needed that. I needed somebody to tell me like, yeah, you're a good player, but you're a good player coming out of Greece, where the pool of players is relatively smaller. And having 25 and 25 in Greece is just not enough. Nobody was telling me at that time that you have slow footwork, you only go left, you're a bad free throw shooter. If you get tired, you can't play fast. And those are the things that I needed to hear at the time. Because I ended up like, let's say that in my freshman season, I spent some time trying to figure out what my role is and how I'm going to be. And it was not easy to try to figure it out. So I needed somebody to tell me and prepare me for what will follow, because I played against some very good players from day one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's great.
Yeah. No, I was going to say the best coaches that I've had are the honest ones. And at the time you sit there and you're like, was he being a dick? You start to think about it, and then it hits you. You know what I mean? It hits you,
yeah.
But then a month or two, or maybe even a year, sometimes it hits people years later, and you're like, what that guy told me was the best thing that I could have ever heard, and that helped me so much for the future. So ultimately,
for sure.
Now, I haven't been in the conversations that you've been with your players, but I feel like that could be potentially it. It's like these guys hear
for
it.
Sure.
Maybe they can take it one way, but you've been there.
No.
You've seen it. You've had the great experiences, and they're like,
I don't want to be likable. I don't want to be likable.
And the
biggest issue that I'm facing is the parents, because I'm giving them the real picture. And sometimes I feel like I destroy what they had built in their heads for their kids. But that's how I care about them. Because if you care, you have to be honest and you have to give them the real picture. Otherwise, they will fail. For sure, they will fail. So I'm not trying to be likable. I don't care about that. I want to help. I played. I'm very blessed that I played and I had the career I had. Now that I retired, it's their time to play. And they need the right guidance to play, because we need players. Basketball, it's endless. We need players now. So in order to have the most players play, you need to have people around them that will tell them how to be successful. And the advice I give them, it's based on my experience and how I did what they want to do. I walked every step of the way that they want to walk. I'm not just saying something that I heard from another guy. It's based on my experience and my expertise on these things and college basketball and whatnot. It's interesting because sometimes parents at the beginning, I see that the way that they react to what I'm saying is It's a good reality check, but after that initial shock, then they understand that I care and I want the best for the kids, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, you're never candy coating how tough it is, because it's nowhere near as easy as they think. So you're that initial breaking down of their brick wall of reality is letting them know this is a long journey and there are quick fixes.
Sure.
That's probably why I wear this magic pill hat. But get into this a little bit. You play for a lot of different coaches. And typically there are coaches that listen to us and follow this pod. What are some of the common threads between the best coaches you've had? Because you're going from UAB. Obviously, you had coaches in Greece before you came over.
Correct.
Then you had guys at UAB, that crew. Then you were with us, obviously, at Ohio State. And then you move on and you play for multiple teams professionally for a 14-year period. So a lot of experiences with coaches there. What are some of the common threads of guys that you had that were, you said, that you could take from all the guys you had? Common threads, good things, you know, that stuck with you.
Yes. So there's a lot of things, actually. It's, as a professional player, early in my career, I made the mistake that I thought at a point that I knew it all, or working with some coaches I didn't know so much, I figured, or I thought that I wouldn't take anything out of this working relationship. And it was one of the biggest mistakes that I did, because once I became receptive again to information, to criticism, to, you never stop learning as a player to begin with. Even if you are 22 or if you are 34, I retired at 34. So if you approach that with whoever you're working with, he has to give you something that will be useful if you are receptive. That's the biggest thing to begin with, because all coaches are different. All coaches have a different approach, have different personalities, have different way of coaching and try to get their message across. But to begin with, as a player, you must be receptive and you must have your antennas, let's say, open, so you can get that information and try to apply it to the best of your ability. That's the only way that as a player you become better. Then I'm lucky because I had very good coaches in Europe also when I played and professionally. Some of the common threads is being strict, but at the same time have freedom. Build their principles, have principles as a team, but at the same time give you freedom inside the context, which is very difficult. It might sound easy, but it's very difficult, because you need to have the respect of the players. You need to earn the respect of the players for that discipline and, you know, have that principle. And at the same time, trust the players so you can give them freedom based on their individual characteristics and talents, so they can thrive and they can, how can I say that? Like, I had that with the coaches that were insecure, because the coaches that are insecure, they understand that it's a player's game. So they will give you the freedom to do things. But at the same time, there has to be principles in offense and in defense to begin with. And then building on that, once you build the relationship with the coach, that the coach lets you do some of the things that you can do, because he knows that you're not going to take advantage of that freedom. He knows that this freedom is in a context. So this is something that I saw with the coaches, that our teams were successful and we went far, that all of them had their principles. All of them had some things that you needed to follow. And most of these coaches were putting the team first, regardless of who the player was, regardless of the contract of the player, regardless of how big you are, if you are a diva, whatever. Everybody's equal, but nobody's the same. But based on that, you need to understand that treating your number one player with number 12 player on your roster will be the same, because that's how you put the example as well. You have to set the example on that for the teams to be successful and for the teams to have longevity and not just spikes of talent. You must have that. And that has to do with, it has to do for me with the coach's character in terms of how they can earn the respect of the players. Because there were some coaches that demand your respect. And especially today, you can't do that. Back in my day, it was a little bit easier because players could play out of fear for you. But today, players will not be like that. They will just completely shut down. So you have to find ways as a coach to earn the respect, because coaches are always the people that the players look up to. At the end of the day, they want that information. They're looking for the feedback. No matter if the player says I'm insecure or not, they always want the feedback from the coach. They want that connection with the coach. And for me, this is very important.
Yeah, I love it.
And especially for a coach's perspective, if you have to demand the respect and you're going to push principles, how you were saying they have certain principles that you push onto the players. There's one thing that I've learned and been able to take away from the other pods that we've had is not only are you going to push them onto your players, you have to be able to have them yourself, or at least prioritize them yourself. So if you're going to tell people, hey, I want you to do X, Y, and Z, and then you're like, you walk out of the room and don't do any of it yourself. I want you to clean up after yourself once you're done, but then you just eat and then walk away and leave all your trash sitting around. It's like little things like that, because not only are you going to push it, people are watching you. And they always say actions speak way louder than words. And if that's any replica right there, like your actions, everybody is going to be watching your actions,
for sure.
The upperclassmen. And then even it's like a trickle effect in the sense of the upperclassmen have been around, maybe not in today's era, but the upperclassmen have typically been around the coach long enough that they start to slowly pick up tendencies. The underclassmen start to pick up tendencies from the upperclassmen that they picked up from the coach. And it's a complete trickle down effect. And it's crazy how it works. You don't even subconsciously, you have no idea that you're picking up those, like the way you do things, the talking.
It's, I agree with what you're saying 100%. And coaches are leaders in a team because there is one coach. I'm talking about head coaches. There is one head coach. So in order to achieve that, you have to lead by example. That's how it is. You have to lead by example. You can't preach about things that you don't believe in.
No, that's so true. We're living in a time right now at the recording of this pod, April 24th. Obviously been an interesting situation with the New England Patriots and Coach Vrabel. But he's actually, I heard, missing day three of the draft so he can go to counseling.
Yep.
Because he feels he needs to. He's saying this is going to be best thing for me and my family, for my kids, and for my team. The actions of, is this a reaction to a previous action? Yeah, it is. But it's the right action because it's ultimately head coaches setting the example of ownership and practicing what you preach and doing things the right way at the highest level that you can. Yeah, that was a great answer, man. I was just curious as to some of the things that you played for a lot of people. That's gonna hit some people square that listen to this, for sure.
The one thing I do want to make sure to cover too is like the decision. So as we mentioned with adaptive services, what you're doing is you are necessarily, I know we talked on the phone before and like you're an agent, but you're not necessarily an agent. You do what everything and that an agent does. You just don't hold the official title, but you're working with your company that you found, Adaptive Services. And really you are guiding players, international players, particularly Greece, helping them try to get over into the States, different universities. I know you've had the guys that you've sent me, I won't necessarily go into names and universities and all this stuff, but you've sent me some, I've seen some great athletes, and I know there's a lot of potential opportunities that they're looking at too. With those are big decisions for these guys, because I couldn't even imagine going internationally to go and just take a trip for a week, let alone to have to go and pack your stuff up, move away from your family for a whole year, let alone maybe the rest of your life. You don't know. So with those big decisions, what mistakes do you see maybe some of those players, and we've covered a lot of them already, but are there any mistakes that you see players, this is what I'm prioritizing, and you're like, no, this is how you have to prioritize it? Because it sounds like the NIL, the financial side, we've talked a lot about what coaches can change, but maybe from the player's perspective, if there's any advice that you have for them, this is how to prioritize and look at what you want.
For sure. First things first about what you said, and to clarify that, I don't act, my whole approach at Adaptive Services is more holistic in terms of the experience of the player I want them to have. It's more holistic in terms of development, in terms of finding the right place, in terms of mentoring. I'm being their mentor. That's for me the priority. In terms of consulting, in terms of everything, it's not just the recruiting service. So for me, that's the priority. And the kids at the age, in my opinion, at least, the kids at the age of 15, 16, they don't need just an agent in, so that they can communicate with teams. They need somebody that they can look up to. They need to hear the truth, and they need to find, not they need to see what's best for them, not just the next day, to have a plan for the next years. So that's my overall approach. Now, I'm trying to let the kids know to the best of my ability about what is best for them in the long run. So in terms of priorities, as you said, in the world that we live in with the NIL and the Repsia and the collectives and all this stuff, that I'm trying to guide them and navigate them to that. It's what I said before, you need to think about the long game. You need to go somewhere that they want you. You need to go somewhere that the coach understands who you are as a player. And I'm the same way I'm giving the coaches the full picture of the player. I don't want somehow to fool a coach or trick a coach by getting a player that it's not good enough for the program, because for two reasons. First of all, it will backfire to the player. The player will not have a good experience. The player will want to transfer. The player will be not happy and unsuccessful. And at the same time, because of me, my name and my reputation. And I don't want to do that with any coach. And I don't want to do that with any player. So it's very simple. So what I'm trying to tell these kids is transfer up, don't transfer down. Even if you don't want to, even if you don't like that and you don't have, transfer up. Because there are so many examples of kids transferring down. And the company's philosophy is, we don't just care about the placement solely. You know, I don't care about placing. Actually, I've said that to kids, boys and girls, because I'm also working with women's basketball, that had D1 offers. And I said to the kids, I really believe in you. You have a big upside. But don't go there, because don't go to that D1 school, even if they want you. You're not ready for that level yet. You will not stay. At the end of the year, you will have an exit meeting with the coach. Start with another program, whether that's a Division II or JUCO, that are very competitive programs, because now it's a domino effect. More players and better players come to D1. That means that some players that would play D1 will have to start from a lower starting point. So these schools are very good schools. They're no joke. And build your way up. Transfer up, because at the end of the year, you will have these talks with the coaches that you don't want to have otherwise. You have to, especially as international, especially if you are under-recruited, especially if you haven't played with the FIBAs, the U18s, the national teams, that to blow up as a player, coaches need to evaluate you in the States. And for me, the toughest thing to do is to let the coaches know what they're watching. If they're watching a Greek kid, so that they can translate the level. Okay, I'm seeing this kid, he's killing. What is that level I'm watching? If I take this kid today from Greece and I place him to the States, what is he? What high school can he play? What is he? 3-star, 4-star, whatever. So you have to let the kids know that, okay, you are playing great in Greece, you are killing, you are playing in the Rising Stars League, which is our Greek AAU equivalent, but still, I'm sorry, you are nobody. You need to understand that. You need to, at the age of 16, 17, you're nobody. Are you getting paid from sports? No, you pay to play. You still pay to play. Don't be thinking that because you had a 30-point game, immediately you became somebody. Right. You have a long way to go. It's a marathon. I said before, it's a marathon. So the kids that are under-recruited, or the kids that need some more time development, or the kids that need more exposure for the coaches, because the coaches, U.S. coaches, if you score 30 in Greece and they don't know the level, and you come to the States and you score 10 in a league that they know and understand, they will appreciate you more, because they know the level of the league you're playing now, and they have a reference point. Oh, this kid played there. Yeah, that the league has produced this kid that played in that league last year went there, and so on and so forth. Build your way up. Transfer up. It's very simple. Transfer up. But be patient. You don't just be chasing the money. Chase. You said before something that the thing I'm most frustrated about when I'm talking to coaches with some of my players is their first question, what are they looking for in terms of dollar sign? I don't want to talk about, let's talk about role, let's talk about development.
Right.
And then money will follow for sure. But at the same time, if you're not going to play, you're not gonna have money to negotiate for next year. It's very simple. Don't just be thinking about one-year deals. And this is, at the moment, what I'm stressing out to the players. Go to the States for the right reasons. You need to, don't just go for 1 year or 2 years. Because also you need to finish and get your education. You need to get your degree and play and build your image and have an IR and have all these things. But it's not easy today because they see all these players and the amount of money they're getting that they're thinking, yeah, if this guy is making 1 million, I am 1/10 of this player now. So I could be making 100. Wrong analogies, apples and oranges.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to buy mom a new car and be driving around in a Rolls Royce here soon and new house. No, but yeah. To your point, that's the thing is, like, I've seen more than enough times and coaches who are recruiting, once kids hit the portal at Division I, Division II, Division III, we stole two kids who were Division I guys. They transferred down to Division III. We had a high-end kid who, I won't say his name, but he was formerly at Memphis and didn't play a minute, but he was considering coming to us. And the reason being is because it's like, come get your numbers, right? Come get your numbers with us. You'll be the player of the year. You're going to kill it, blow it out of the water. Then now you have something to sell, but nobody wants to see somebody who's averaged 1.2 points a game with shot five shots all season. You haven't done anything. You haven't proven anything. Get your numbers at a lower level. Yeah. And then everybody wastes a year going to that high major just because they want to be able to put it on social media and get the glorification of going somewhere, which is great. But at the same point, it's tough.
And with the chaos that there is today at the portal, I believe that there are so many kids in the portal today that deep down, they don't even know why they put their name in the portal.
Right. No, they it was because it was like, let me just see what's out there. And they don't even know what they want or maybe what's best. Yes. So it just becomes a default thing, like almost like a reflex action. That's why I think the number is up to, 3,200 out of 5,800 potential Division I players.
Crazy. Yes.
But last thing I got before I know Dougie's getting ready to land the plane here in a little bit. If coaches want to do a better job recruiting internationally, what or maybe one or two things you would suggest they do. And I know it's easy now with video. You can find anything. You can watch a 3-on-3 game in the Philippines via a drone if you want to. But what would you suggest coaches do just from a standpoint of building relationships with coaches in Europe? There's got to be some input put into that. There's got to be some investment put into that as opposed
for
to...
Sure.
Because you want to have great trust in who you're sending a kid to, if you're from your side.
For sure. So there's a couple of things, in my opinion. So most coaches that they recruit internationally, they know a little bit of the landscape because they're coming to Europe to watch the FIBA events, like the U16, U18, U20 European Championship, which is fine. But at the same time, there's so many more kids that they don't make it to the final roster of these national teams because not each team has only 12 talented players in each age group. So for me, one proposal would be, but that would have a little bit conflict with the NCAA and the recruiting calendar, be able as a coach to go and see some players during the winter time or during, I don't know, November, that you still have one game per week. So coaches can also go out there and see club teams and see high school kids, like Greek high school kids, Greek high school teams, Greek AAU basketball that is taking place throughout the year. Don't just go watch the national team players because there's not enough of them, not enough for everybody. Each country has 12 kids that you are going to watch. Some of them don't want to go to the States. Some of them are already playing pro in their countries or they want to stay in their countries. So there's not enough players that you're watching. So in order to have a better assumption and a better understanding of who you want to recruit, maybe you should go more and watch some more U18 club teams, high level high school teams, Greek AAU throughout the season somehow. So then you have a better understanding of the league. You don't need me to try to explain and translate what you're watching. and also be able to see some players that are being under-recruited because maybe some of them didn't play on the national team. I'm a product of a national team that we won it all. The only thing that we didn't win was the World Championship that we lost to Team USA in the final. Most of my teammates played at high level, higher than me. Some of them in NBA, a lot of them have won the EuroLeague, etc. There were some players that they played in the U16 that never made it. And there were some players that they were cut from the U16 that are still playing at the highest level in Europe. Because at that age, or at the, even at the U18, some players will blossom at the age of 18, 19, 20. So that they might not be at that FIBA event you are going to watch them, but maybe they will blow up in a year or two. So you need to have your eyes on that.
Yeah, I love it. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I got to say, and then it's probably I'll leave it at that. But I truly, I said this before, international basketball, USA, and especially now we're talking NBA Olympics. USA has always been more predominantly the more premier just because they have the better athletes. That's going to be balancing out if it's not already balanced out here soon. And I think there's going to be a big jump where international is going to be like taking a step over the states. Now, obviously, states have a lot more, I would say, better athletes, but the international is producing and creating way better players. You look at all the MVPs in the NBA lately, they're all international, including Canada, obviously, but they're all international people. And it's like, it is skyrocketing up the amount of talent that is coming from international. So it's great to be able to learn this perspective for coaches too, because if this is what's for up and coming, this is what they got to keep an eye out for.
That the game is becoming global, that the gap has closed a little bit between the NBA and the US talent and level compared to some Europeans. Some, obviously. Still, we can't match the level of athleticism and physicality and explosiveness. We're trying. But at the same time that the game is becoming global, you see now there are some things, projects going on, like NBA is looking to expand to Europe. So the game is becoming, it's becoming a worldwide thing, which will be one. So that's why you see so many Europeans. That's why you see so many players from Africa, from Asia. I believe that the gap has closed, and this translates to college. Like you see in the NBA, how many Europeans or how many internationals are there, and they're playing at the highest level. And you will start to see that, because all that, in my opinion, is a domino effect. You will see.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together. We'll be right back.
coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.